When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, here we are then, sometime in the year 2022. Who knows what day or time it is, but we are here. And what I know from previous starts of years, previous Januaries, is that we all need something to cheer us up and to buoy our spirits because, you know, it takes its toll, doesn't it? The constant drinking and eating, and now you're left in this void and you don't know if you're still allowed to have a drink at 11 in the morning or not. Hell, maybe that's just me. But look, this is an episode of Desert Island Dicks featuring Fern Brady. It was our first Desert Island Dicks live that we did back in early December, and it's a beauty. So I hope you enjoyed this one, because we enjoyed it a lot. And after you've listened to this, you might think, hey, I need something to cheer me up in January, and that live show certainly sounded like a good time. Well, if that's you, then I've got some great news for you, because we're doing another one at the beginning of February. The 4th of February is a Friday night at 2 North Down in King's Cross, London, and it features the very wonderful and incredible Lou Sanders. So it's going to be a really good one. You know, it'll be like the first Friday night after January's finished. We'll all have got paid. I mean, what better way is there to celebrate the end of January? I think this is a good thing. It will keep us going through the toughest month of the year. And then we can all come together, have a laugh and a drink. And then London is your oyster. Or the rest of the country if you want to take a train from King's Cross, which is nearby and very well connected. Okay, so there you go. I'm going to shut up now, but if you are interested, then you can get tickets from the link in the description of this podcast, or the link which is also in our socials at DixPod on Twitter and Instagram, or you can even Google the 2 North Down website and get them there. Okay, here's a taste of what you're in for. This is Fern Brady at Desert Island Dicks Live. My name's Dan Benedictus, and welcome to Desert Island Dicks Live. Thank you. It's the show that sees you marooned on a desert island after a plane crash with the worst people and worst things imaginable. Who they are and why they're a dick is up to our guest. And here to share their Desert Island Dicks with us today is comedian Fern Brady. How you doing?
Good. That was a nice posh hello from one member of the audience. Hiya.
You okay?
Yeah, good, thanks.
So we're about to share our, well, your Desert Island Dicks, the worst people and worst things to be stuck with. Do you find that easy as a person to just sort of rant about things that you hate?
Yeah, I'll send you my choices pretty much immediately.
Yeah.
When you phoned to do the research chat, I started off telling you my least favourite people straight away. Did I not?
You seem like a natural, and that's kind of why we booked you. You know, you're in the right place.
And how many people in the audience work in radio and know the people I'm going to talk about?
There's a smattering, I think. We'll see the reaction.
You look like you work in media.
I do, or they
no,
do.
No, the audience.
Yeah, that's kind of like saying you look like a wanker. But it's fine.
No, it's no, fine. We can all be wankers together.
Oh, that's I'm what we're in Soho for. It's a safe space for wankers. Mm. All right, well, let's just get stuck into it then. Who's going to be your first choice?
Frank Skinner.
Okay.
Taboo.
Frank Skinner, the lovely avuncular Frank Skinner. What have you got against Frank Skinner? Why do you think he'd be a terrible, terrible person to be stuck with?
Never met him. Never worked with him. I didn't tell my agent that I was going to say this on the podcast, so he's going to be delighted. Basically, I heard him on I never liked him when I was a child watching him on telly or anything. I just got bad vibes off him. And then I heard him on Radio 4 recently, and he's... I don't trust comedians that are religious. I was brought up really strictly Catholic, and Frank Skinner chooses to be a Catholic now, even though he's an adult and no one's making him go to church. So he was on Radio 4 telling this guy really confidently that when he prays, he believes that he's literally talking to God. And then the interviewer gave him a sort of get out by saying, oh, do you think maybe prayer is a bit like meditation and you talking to God is actually talking to sort of inner wisdom within yourself? And Frank Skinner was like, no, I'm talking to God. I'm talking directly to the big man in the sky. And I just found that amazing that he could say that and not be totally embarrassed.
Yeah. I've got a feeling, and I'd have to check this, but I'm sure he came to it quite late as well, which is even more surprising. It's like...
Those are always the ones that are the most enthusiastic.
But you know when something makes less sense? Like, I've got a friend who... Like, for all our childhood, never smoked. He never gave in to peer pressure. And he went to university at 19, just started smoking and never stopped. And you know when you're like, this is the wrong time to start this thing. Like, it doesn't make any sense now you're grown up. Like, surely you could see it's stupid now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite a weird comparison, if I'm honest. But you sort of see what I'm getting to.
It's just comedians who are religious as well, I find very suspicious. It just kind of... makes me question all the other stuff that they're saying, if they have such a childlike belief system. I also have a thing where the people that... I mean, he's a massively popular, skilled stand-up, but there's... I remember one of the worst one-night stands I ever had was with this very English blokey bloke that said, mate, about 15 times in a sentence. And I remember waking up next to him, and I felt his big, chunky Kit Kat fingers touch my shoulder. And as I opened my eyes, I just saw all of Frank Skinner's biographies on his bookshelf. So it's like the type of English man that likes him is also why I don't like him.
So let's picture the two of you on a desert island together. So, I mean, you know, there's going to be like basic survival needs. I think it's going to be distracting if like you're kind of going, right, let's make a shelter. And he's like...
He's doing a rosary
exactly,
next to me.
Yeah, or he's trying to make the water holy or something. It's like, no, that's not only drinking water.
Come on, Frank, turn these loaves into 40 loaves or whatever. Do the wine and fish thing that Jesus did.
Yeah, so I think it's an awkward choice. Also, he's always wearing a suit, so I think he's going to sort of get quite hot and bothered quite quickly. I think it's a strong first choice. Who's going to join the two of you?
Holly Willoughby and Philip Schofield.
Okay, so like co-joined.
If I'm allowed to have them as one person.
We'll have them as a unit, like a Jedward sort of, a daytime Jedward.
Together, Jedward have got really political on Twitter recently, by the way. They started, someone else has noticed this. Yeah, they started promising to say some home truths about the entertainment industry and got... follow them on Twitter. It got really interesting. But anyway, Holly Willoughby and Philip Schofield are two of the most sinister people in broadcasting I've ever come across. And if you're middle class and you work in the media in Britain, you can get away with like doing and saying really mad things. And just the way they interviewed loads of so-called benefits scroungers on their couch 10 years ago. Do you know what I mean? They were really horrible to people when benefits were getting cut. And then the other week they had a thing where they made a feature of a piece where a woman had cancer and couldn't pay her heating bill. So this morning let her win a competition where she could pay for her heating. And that was meant to be a poignant thing. They're just, the programme this morning is everything that's wrong about Britain. I don't mind Dermot O'Leary and Alison Hammond. They're great. Dermot O'Leary follows me on Instagram, so he's obviously a good person.
I don't know. Like, I know what you mean about them being creepy, because it's like... It feels like afterwards they go home and like they go to sleep in a box that's like a life-size Airfix kit. Do you know what I mean? They just press themselves back into the plastic mould
and then they like popped out again in the morning. Like,
why?
Do you know what I mean? Like there's just
massive Tories. And the more Phillips followed the 5-2 diet as well, the more Phillips been fasting, you can tell he has like absolute seething contempt for fat people. Like he never says it when he interviews them on the show, but he's, oh Christ, he's just such a terrifying man. Mm. And it's weird how they're held up as these. I mean, I don't know how other people view them. If the nation generally thinks of them as these warm, lovely people, but I just find them very sinister.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got the two of them on an island. I imagine that. I mean, you're there with them and Frank Skinner, who also does a bit of presenting. So it's going to be like. You're sort of like the unwanted guest on the sofa a lot of the time that you're spending together, isn't it? Like, and you never quite know which way they're going to go. Like, some days it's like, here's Fern. She tried to get water out of a coconut for 2 days and failed. Well, today we're giving her an opened coconut. And
it'd be terrible, like, man. I'd be like...
Fern. She's wasted all these fucking nuts.
What if you ever saw when Vanessa Feltz went mental in Big Brother, that'd be me drawing messages in lipstick. And
yeah. Carving deceit into a palm tree or something like that. Yeah.
Guess what? I met her at something. She's actually amazing.
Vanessa Feltz.
She's one of the, like, the soundest people.
Oh, really? That's quite reassuring.
She demanded the runner get us a plate of, like, cheese straws and grapes. And she was like, where's my fucking cheese? And then got them to bring it over and then just didn't eat any of it. And I just thought it was really entertaining.
Now you say that, it's like the least surprising thing, though. I mean, like, of course she demanded that. I mean,
no, but in a real, she was very, just very funny, nice lady.
I thought you were going to say cheese straws and gravy, and I'm like, wow, oh my God, that's nuts. But yeah, fair enough. Okay, so you've already got like a weird setup now with like a few people who could turn very easily and decide to like you or not like you, depending on their whim. Mm. Who's going to be the fourth person joining the group of you on the island?
Well, this was hard to pick because there's so many of them, but it's Tess Holliday, who's an influencer, an Instagram influencer. I think she's most well known because she was on the cover of Cosmopolitan. She's a plus size woman, and I think it all got debated by Piers Morgan and the media. But that's not why I don't like her. I generally don't like influencers because they seem to post a lot of stuff that's like a mix of Eastern spirituality mixed with narcissism, mixed with stuff calling themselves a goddess, and a lot of chat about self-care. And then when you meet influencers in real life, they're these really miserable people that won't even look you in the eye. And like, if you've ever met any
big famous influencers,
they're really... And they've got these mad faces that look amazing on Instagram, but then look really strange in person. So Tess Holliday annoys me a lot because she'll post a lot of stuff like F your beauty standards because she's fat, but then she has lip fillers, cheek fillers, Botox, and lives up to every other feminine beauty ideal. She's just a very angry person, but then claims to be happy all the time. And that's the gist of a lot of influencers. I like, there's a woman called Celeste Barber that takes the piss out of all those sorts of influencers. Australian woman, she's good.
Yeah. I think just the idea of being stuck with someone that self-obsessed without an outlet on a desert island when all their channels... Have shut down.
If she had her phone, she'd be trying to make the whole experience go viral rather than helping us start a fire.
I don't think it would stop them though. Even if the phone wasn't working, they'd just be like chipping away at a rock until it was an iPhone shape, and then just sort of like, you know, just be like, sorry, you're in my light.
But now you say that, maybe all that creativity, because it wasn't getting channeled into the phone, maybe they would be the most useful person out of everyone.
I mean, I'd say that would be true if it was sort of like a genuine, useful creativity. If it was kind of like, oh, I used to be a carpenter, or like I used to be a sculptor, but now I can sculpt this into a shelter. But it's like, what do? You make, like, you kind of go, today I've been sponsored to tell you about this pencil. Like, it's not transferable. Do you know what I mean? They have no CV because it's like, I was 18, I became an influencer. It's done. There's nothing transferable other than like, I breathe oxygen, in which case in your scenario is kind of a way, you know, it's kind of competing against.
Oh, I disagree with that. But I'm saying that because I've done a couple of paid placement adverts on my Instagram. But, you know, photography skills, makeup skills. There's lots of transferable skills.
But not for
writing,
the island.
Writing the text underneath the post.
I just think on the island, though, it's like...
Oh, yeah, sorry, on the island, yeah.
On the island, they can maybe go, look, I know what's wrong with you, Fern. You've had a grilling from those guys on the sofa, but I'm going to turn your life around, and I've made, like, a little face pack out of these sort of, like, coconut husks. And then maybe then you would feel like $1 million for one day, and it would be okay. But in general, you know, I just don't think they're going to help you that much.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. And also, then they're going to set off the interview. You know, they're going to set off Frank and Holly and everyone going, so what do you actually do? What do you actually do? And you make how much? I just think it's going to be an awkward atmosphere. Then you're going to have to protect them because you're going to feel bad for them against the onslaught of the daytime TV people.
Out of everyone, I think Holly Willoughby would be the most, the toughest and the most resourceful, actually.
You think?
Yeah, she has a hardness underneath her sort of beautiful polished exterior.
Yeah.
I think she'd definitely be the one that sort of... Because also, her and Philip, they are that type of person that is absolutely in love with... They probably have keep calm and carry on signs in their house, or at least a tote bag that says it somewhere. They absolutely want to shag the concept of World War II and that this sort of notion of Britishness that doesn't exist.
Yeah. Well, I think you've picked quite a good mélange of... I don't know if that's the right word. I don't know where that came from. A good selection of
mélange.
People. Mélange. Is that the right word? So, you know what? I haven't been in Soho in a long time. And it's a powerful vibe. I don't know. If something happens, it just... It's awful. Anyway, look, mercifully, amongst the wreckage of the plane, there was some food and drink left over. Unfortunately for you, it's your least favourite food and drink in the world. What are they and why are they so bad?
Oh, pâté.
Pâté.
Yeah.
Lovely minced up, chopped, reformed livers. What's wrong
creamed,
with you?
Creamed, pureed animal organs. We're coming up to Christmas now and more people are going to be eating it.
Mm.
Just the smell of it on someone else's breath is like, even just imagining it, it makes my stomach turn. It's so awful.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, isn't it? Because it is just mashed up organs. Reformed into a paste.
Right?
But sometimes it's exotic. Like, you know, it's like, oh, it's marmalade glazed reformed organs in a paste. They don't put that on the packet, obviously.
I'm a vegetarian. I don't even like the vegetarian recreations of it.
Are there vegetarian pâtés?
Yeah, but I don't even like seeing it. The worst is seeing someone chew up a cracker with pâté or bread with pâté and seeing it through their open mouth. It's horrible. So give me a cheer if you guys like pâté.
Yeah.
Oh, lots of you! Why? It's tasty. Oh, there's texture. It's so smooth meat.
You can...
It's horrible.
You can get chunkier ones as well, can't you? Depending on how...
No, you don't.
I don't know what's more hardcore.
What, cat food?
Yeah. It's not...
Chunky ones.
Yet. I think you get sort of more chunky ones, or is that
what are the
else?
Chunks?
It's the same mash, not slightly less mashed up shit.
I mean the whole pâté family that I don't like terrine either, salmon, moose, any of that, because we're coming up to that season of all those kind of the salmon, moose, and pâté, and the mackerel stuff as well. That's a thing.
Yeah.
But the tension makes me feel like you all like it. And you all stuff your mouths with it and have just open mouths filled with pâté, smooth, creamy organs. Oh.
See, I'm sort of on the fence. I don't hate it, but it's very difficult to make a case for it. Someone on our Instagram recently said, oh, you just agree with everything. And it's like, because you're making a really good case. How can I now go, oh, these delicious creamy organs, but when you spread them on a bit of bread, like there's no, you can't make a case for it being nice. Because even if
it shouldn't have the texture. I don't want meat to have the texture of like smooth, creamy galaxy chocolate. It's... wrong.
Is there? Is it maybe? Could they administer it in a different way? Like There's no. You can't do anything with it. You can't do shots.
Administer it in a different. Like I have before I was vegetarian. I had eaten animal organs whole, and that's preferable. Mm. But you still get like arteries or veins or something in them. Mm. It's
gross. Let's not forget, this is going to be aeroplane pate as well that you're stuck with. So
is that a thing?
No, just you've crashed. You know the
Oh right.
The context. This pretend framework. We're hanging it off. You know, but I imagine like on a plane, it would probably come out of those little UHT little things. You know, when you get
well,
the
that's
milk,
good because there would be a small sachet, serving
you just
of
sort
it.
Pop it out like a little ice cube of lung. Mm. Or no, it's liver, isn't it? Anyway. Okay, well, that's a good... I think as well, Frank Skinner, he must love pate.
Oh, he loves
Frank
it!
Frank Skinner, he's got potted meats, hasn't he? He's like, oh,
he
shrimp.
Loves it.
Like, he's got like some crab paste or something. He's like the poster boy for that kind of thing, I think.
He loves it, man.
You can imagine the influencer trying to do a blog, like scratching it into a rock because there's nowhere to publish the blog, but about how like a pate-only diet for 30 days is good for your complexion or something like that.
A pate now wouldn't be an Instagrammable food, actually. It never comes up on Instagram. I mean, there's other foods that I hate.
You can add one in if you'd like.
Anything, the layer of gelatin that comes up in sliced ham.
Pate's friend.
Yeah.
I mean, the jellies on the pate as well, they're close bedfellows, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of this is a big reason why I'm a vegetarian is just all the mad unnatural stuff like jelly and meat.
Okay. So we're going to give you a nice pate with a big layer of jelly on top. So that when you slice it, there's a nice sort of...
Or like a pork pie where there's a layer of gelatin. Between the pork and the pastry. Yeah.
Okay, what are you going to wash it down with? What's your drink choice?
Any alcohol I don't really like. This is a controversial choice, I'm sure, as I look at everyone drinking.
Christmas time in Britain, and you don't like lovely, lovely booze. It's fair.
Yeah,
it's fine.
What? Just doesn't suit me. I'm not like clean living by any means, but it's just not a drug that suits me. I mean, like I took MDMA on Saturday, and the worst that happened was I started replying really earnestly to everyone's tweets on my timeline. And I live in Catford in Southeast London, and we should all be on ecstasy in Catford because you don't feel frightened anymore of all the maniacs in Catford. You just look into people's faces and you just see pain and hurt and you feel compassion. I felt like a Buddhist monk. I had a great interaction getting the bus home because a guy tried to do that sort of sexist, like benevolent thing of going, "No, after you," as I got on the bus. I went, "After you, sir, after you," and insisted that he got on the bus before me. Fantastic. A great night listening to Massive Attack, getting the bus from Crystal Palace to Catford. Whereas drink, it just makes me feel sick. It has millions of calories in it. Like, I'm from a country where everyone drinks excessively and they all look like fat melted candles. Like, everyone in Scotland just ages prematurely from drinking too much. So I have really, really conservative views on drink.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you've coupled it with, like, very tolerant views on Class A drugs, so it's...
Well,
like,
that's what I felt like I had to say that.
Like, you know, like, you're not sort of being too... You know, it's okay.
You know what? I feel like there'd be more empathy for me if I was a recovering alcoholic, because people have more sympathy then, because they go, you understand how great drink is then. You just can't do it anymore. Whereas I've never got into it, and I tried, but I just can't get into it. I think a big thing is I've never struggled to say what I think, and I don't need alcohol to make me a slut. So then in Britain, I mean, British people are so repressed that that's kind of alcohol's main function, isn't it? To tell people who you think are a cunt, to finally tell them they're a cunt. And to have sex with people that are embarrassingly ugly, I guess. That's why people need alcohol. Mm. And I've never really felt I need it for that.
I mean, you make a good case for not needing it. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I can't argue with that. I mean, you're going to be sharing the island with Frank Skinner. Again, he's a teetotaler now. But
well, we could bond over that.
Yeah, but he's a former alcoholic, so he's going to, you know, like say, coming from different angles. I'm, you know, quite an alcohol fan, but I find now, increasingly, it's just making me worse and worse. And I'm like, I don't want to give it up because it tastes nice. But, like, I mean, I'm not drinking to excess. I'm just in my house. Like, it's all I've got to do because I've got kids. Mm. So, like...
Get in the weed.
And all I do... Oh, no. It's, thing is, alcohol makes me even more tired. Weed is, like, even more... It's like, I can't... You know, and
no, you need the right. There's strains that make you feel more awake. I'm a big stoner,
okay. And
I hate when people tell me they can't get into weed because they feel paranoid. Because I'm like, when you first started drinking, you probably weren't very good at that. I mean, if you look at a Saturday night in London, a lot of people aren't very good at drinking.
Yeah.
But they persist with it week after week. Whereas with weed, a lot of people have never really given it the chance. Yes, there's a bit at the start when you first smoke it where you look around the room at your friends and you think, I should murder all of you. That's just the first bit. You have to ride that out and then the good bit happens after that.
Okay, well, we'll have to have a chat afterwards then. Because, you know, I want to be an open-minded guy and I do love my children, so, you know, I'll just... Let's give it a go. Okay, well, yeah, booze and pate join you. It's quite, do you know what? It's accidentally quite a Christmassy choice.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for the 1st of December. So, yeah, well done. Okay, now, Fern, fortunately, you won't be without entertainment on the island. The plane's entertainment system continues to work, but just your luck, it only has two working settings. One is your least favourite song of all time, and the other is your least favourite film. What are they and why?
My least favourite song is the one that where the woman goes, hey, 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 hey. I said hey. Four Non-Blondes.
Four Non-Blondes. I think it's called...
That doesn't sound anything like the song, did it?
Sounds enough like it.
She has such a bad voice. She shouldn't sing. But she, I mean, she writes songs. She's like a famous songwriter.
That's the annoying thing, isn't it? When, like, because... I lived through a time of working in radio when they played a fuck of a lot of Scouting for Girls and then they finally went away and then you find out like, oh no, but the guy's actually very successful. He's writing for One Direction now. And it's like, so he stopped and now he's even richer. What the fuck is going on? It's so frustrating.
Yeah. Oh no, I mean, I don't begrudge her songwriting career at all. I actually went back to the song recently and I watched the music video for the first time for the Four Non-Blondes song because I felt guilty for some reason that I hated it so much because a lot of people like it, I think. Do you like it? Does anyone like it? Yeah, so I think it's a song that really divides people rather than one that everyone hates. But I watched it and I still don't like it. I just don't like the sound of it.
She's got quite an abrasive voice. And isn't it in the song she's like, I wake up and I step outside and I take a deep breath and then she goes, hey. And like, if you knew someone who did that, if that was like real, if that's based on personal experience and that's your neighbour, you'd be like, this is unbearable. Again, like, and then your friends would stay over and it's like, did you hear that thing this morning? And like, oh, yeah. I don't hear it anymore. It's like a train going past. It's like, no, but like, seriously, it's like, did they tell you when you bought that? And they didn't tell me when she was out then. Obviously, I wasn't. Do you know what I mean? It's like, who does that? It's like, so it's unrealistic, if anything.
To continue the Christmas theme, the other song I don't like that I said to you was my initial choice is Fairy Tale of New York, which is also divisive.
That's a controversial one, isn't it? Yeah.
Why are you gross? Do you love it?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I know a lot of people love it, but I don't I mean, neither of them were Irish and they're singing in this Irishy way. But that's not why I don't like it. My boyfriend's Irish, and one time we had a big fight in a Starbucks in Dublin, in Temple Bar, which is like the really touristy bit of Dublin. And I hate the feeling of doing things in time to music. And we seemed, the Fairy Tale of New York came on, and it was Christmas. And I flung a suitcase across the Starbucks at him, and we were fighting in perfect time to the song. So it also has a really bad memory associated with it.
I bet all the onlookers were like, this is just fucking brilliant.
Everyone was like,
and Fairy Tale of New York came on, these couple were arguing, it was beautiful, wonderful. It was like, I mean, because now it's a bit tricky, isn't it? Because there's like, you know, misogyny and she uses bad words against him, doesn't she? No, you have to censor it now. So now it's like, can we just...
I've just realised another reason I probably feel funny about that song. When I was a child, they used to repeat the same documentary about Christmas songs every single year, and they always had that song in it as number one. But then the crucial bit of the story of that song was they always said the woman in it died in a tragic water ski accident. So I can't hear this. Wasn't that how she died? Yeah, so I can't hear the song without thinking of, like, don't go water skiing, Fern.
I didn't know that, and I almost went, that's amazing. And then I didn't say it, and now I've just said it anyway.
So I think because it's so strongly linked with water ski deaths, I can't...
Wow.
I don't hear it and feel Christmassy.
I mean, water skiing is one of the least Christmassy outdoor activities, isn't it? I mean...
Not if you're rich.
As a Christmas person, you know. Like, it's not like, you know, you have to live your art. Not like the Four Non-Blondes women.
My favourite Christmas song, is what called We're All Going to Die Alone by Malcolm Middleton. He's a Scottish guy that was in the band Arab Strap. You should look it up on YouTube when you get home.
I think just the idea of being stuck on an island with Christmas music is just such an insane... Like, just imagining you sort of, like, slowly perishing, but there's a Christmas music, like... soundtrack the whole time just adds an extra layer of insanity that I really like. That and also Four Non-Blondes I like the idea of Four Non-Blondes wakes you up every day and then Fairy Tale of New York kicks in and that's your existence. What film are you going to watch to try and distract yourself from the incessant music?
Manchester by the Sea. or Marriage Story. They both fall into the category of stories for me that are about just like straight people's pain and straight men suffering in silence, and that's meant to be something I'm interested in or care about. I could watch films over and over again about feisty working class women going on a journey, preferably with a bit of shagging somewhere in the middle. And like then there's some redemption at the end and they escape their small town life. Manchester by the Sea, I watched because a lot of people I knew recommended it. My boyfriend said it was good. And then it was just like, this guy he's in pain, but he's like really manly and he can't express or articulate that pain. Couldn't give a shit, mate. There's enough films about men's lives. I just want to watch stuff about women. Similarly, Marriage Story... Well, wasn't that just because that guy thought that his divorce was interesting and he happened to be a film director, so he made a film about it?
I mean, it looks like it. I mean, like, both characters, like, one's an actor and the other's maybe also an actor, or he's a set designer or something. It's like, can't you just be, like, average people having a fucking...
But he was married... That director was married to Jennifer Jason Leigh and they got a divorce, so I figured it was about that, but I could...
But surely the last thing you want to do is, like, write over it... You see the trailers. I don't understand seeing the trailer for either of those films and going, yeah, no, that looks good. Like, that's the one. Like, you watch the trailer for Manchester by the Sea and there's a bit where there's just two of them in an alley crying, going like, you've been through so much and so have I. And you go,
Friday night.
We've got to put something on. Like, why not that?
I think they're popular films.
But I don't... It's just... But there's fun films. There are good films out there. Like, I mean, maybe it is a good... I just don't understand it. I mean, you know, like, I host a lighthearted podcast, so obviously, you know, like, my radar's skewed, but, like...
I don't know, it feels serious. It feels like a lot of my choices have been divisive. Really, the division has been between the stage and the audience. I feel like you love Patty. And I know a lot of people loved Marriage Story. But I don't like when there's someone who's got a lot of money and access to the film industry then just makes a film about some boring thing that happened in their life. Like, another film that's in that vein is, I think it was called Beautiful Boy, And it's just about this guy, this rich guy, and his son's a drug addict, and then he tries to help him get better from being a drug addict. It's the most boring film about drug addiction ever. The guy that was in, what's his name, Steve? Yeah, yeah, Steve Carell's in it. And I think Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, little Timothy.
It's just, do you know what I mean? When?
Yeah, I know, that sounds like a very Steve Carell being a funny person for a long time and having to do the opposite of it to be serious, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, what's the least funny thing I can do? Like, help my son get through a drug problem.
Yeah.
See, no one laughs. It's not funny. Like,
well, because
do a funny voice. That's better. Like he was in Hotel Trans. No, what was it he did? Hotel Transylvania. Oh, Despicable Me. That's more funny. Mm. Come on, Steve, do the funny voice.
But wait, because you asked me about films that I hate, and I kept thinking of. I mean, there's a lot of films I hate watch, but then because I said Richard Curtis films initially, because they show a version of London that I've never really come across the whole time I've lived here. But then I have watched Notting Hill loads, and there's a lot of sort of romance films that I claim to hate, but I watch them a lot. Like, I just watched this great one on Netflix called Me Before You. It's basically like a big advert for Dignitas. Who's the girl that's in Game of Thrones? She's really fit. Right, Emilia Clarke's in it. And then this guy, he's in a wheelchair and he's paralysed. And Emilia Clarke's really, really cheerful. And then the paralysed guy is really posh and uptight and he's like a horrible bastard. Emilia Clarke has to go and work as his carer. And the whole time the guy wants to go and take the test. Sorry. This was like a blockbuster film. This was a blockbuster film, and they fall in love, and then in the end, Harvey Game of Thrones accompanies him to Dignitas. Then he gives her all his money.
Nice.
And that's meant to be a nice ending. Is that not, whenever they talk about legalising euthanasia, that's always the worry they've got, that people's carers are going to con them out of their money. It's so good. I just watched it. I just watched it for like the third time because I saw that they'd put it on Netflix. And I put it on for my boyfriend and I said, wait till you see this. And he said, I don't want to watch it. You've told me about it in detail many, many times. And it also upholds these like insane stereotypes about what working class people and what posh people are like in Britain. Like the posh people are totally rigid and unable to express emotion. And then the working class people in the film, at one point, Emilia Clarke is like, oh, granddad, thank you for making this present. We are poor, but we all make presents for each other from scratch. It's so good.
And it's called Me Before You.
Me Before You.
Going to Dignitas, you before me. I mean,
because love is about putting yourself before others.
Until it comes to who's going into Dignitas first.
Well, I think it'd be a good film for the island because we're going to have to get used to the idea of death pretty quickly.
Yeah, but you like that film, so you can't get that. You can only get Manchester by the Sea and... I've had a blank. The other one.
Marriage Story.
Marriage Story. So, in-depth sad films for you, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Okay, well, they were well argued. But finally, the island is overrun by the biggest dick of all the animals. Which animal is it and why?
Well, this is one that would actually be near the island. It's a dolphin. Mm. I'm frightened of them.
Frightened of the lovely, smiley dolphin?
Well, no, their smile is like, have you ever met a person that can't stop smiling but their eyes are dead?
Yeah.
That's what a dolphin's like. And I had the opportunity, well, so-called opportunity, given they rape humans and kill them for fun, do they not?
I've heard about them raping each other, yeah.
Oh, well, and they...
I don't know, they might rape humans. I don't know, there's a lot of vulnerable people go swimming with them, don't they? It's like their final wish. So, I mean, there's a chance.
When I was on holiday with my family when I was a teenager, and they were like, oh, we're all going to go swimming with dolphins. And my dad wouldn't do it because he has quite rigid ideas about masculinity as a Scottish man. So dad wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it because I thought dolphins were evil. One of my brothers is weird and, he said it was exploitative, which is fair. So it ended up just being my youngest brother and my mum sort of rode the backs of dolphins. The dolphins did tricks and they made a video of the whole thing. And I remember the good thing, though, was whenever I used to have house parties as a teenager, I would put on this video of my mum swimming with dolphins because me and my friends loved to laugh at it. And we would just rewind it over and over again.
It's difficult saying against dolphins, but I think they're not that nice. Like, I think they do... There is some real bastardy behaviour with them. And I think it's like whenever you get... Because they're very intelligent, aren't they? That's what we hear. Like, dolphins are so clever. And I think as soon as you get an animal that's a bit clever, it turns into a bit of a cunt. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg's clever.
Yeah.
I don't want to be pals with him either. Or ride his back. Whatever people do with dolphins.
Do the funny clicking sound, Mark. Maybe that's how they communicate at Facebook. It wouldn't surprise me. Okay, and the sea is full of these dolphins, we're going to say. And I don't know, can you even eat them? Are they any use? I don't think you can. Maybe there's that one island somewhere that now and again you see a petition. It's like, stop all these islanders killing all the dolphins. I don't know what they do with them, though. I don't think they're useful.
No, I don't think people eat them.
They just kill them?
Yeah, don't they get stuck in nets or something?
Probably. They're big noses. Not so clever now, Mr. Dolphin. Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I like anything that's a slightly controversial choice, so I think it's a good choice to round out your island. And I think you've put together a really good selection of hateful people and things that I think together are going to make a really awkward mélange. I don't know what the word is. Anyway, but I think you've done a superb job. Now, one thing that we like to do on Desert Island Dicks is we have a companion podcast called Compact Dicks, which is where the listeners or audience get to have a say on who and what they think is a dick. And I believe that there have been some cards going around. Here is James, and he's got some listener suggestions. Not listener, you're an audience, it's real. But you are listening, right? Can you hear me? Okay, we've got some to go through. People who wish happy birthday or anniversary to their partner on social media that they live with.
Oh.
That's a good call. Oh,
and I'd go one further, the newest thing, wishing happy birthday to yourself on social media.
Do people do that?
Well, I don't know if it's just because everyone I know is a comedian and a massive narcissist. Yeah, people do. People wish happy birthday to themselves and then do a bit of a reflection on the year.
Jesus Christ. I've got one that says, Hancock beat to death with coconut. I imagine that's Matt Hancock. Yeah? Matt Hancock?
That was me, yeah. That's mad because I was just thinking about him today. Because, the new health secretary was on the radio and I thought, what's Matt Hancock up to these days? And also I'd been in Oliver Bonus earlier in the week and I thought about... poor old Mr. Oliver Bonus. Because that was the guy that Matt Hancock was pumping his wife, wasn't it? I know his name's not literally Oliver Bonus. I just call him that. Anyway, why did you put him down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do I have to repeat that?
I bet
that
he cooked it.
If you can't pick that up on the mic, he said it'd be satisfying to beat him to death with a coconut. And I think that does bear repeating.
And if you've ever tried to open a coconut, it probably still wouldn't split on his head.
No, but I mean... You
Hancock's head would break first.
Yeah, you just have to keep trying, though. You know, God loves a trier.
This is a good one. Cara Delevingne.
Cara Delevingne.
The model. She's a model.
The eyebrow, are you on?
Eyebrows, yeah.
Yeah.
Has a great way with women, though. Her track record with beautiful women is... I kind of admire her. She went out with an Australian model, Stella Maxwell. She went out with St. Vincent for a long time. and she's gone out with another beautiful actress now.
It's almost like attractive people pick up attractive people successfully.
I know, but there's not been a lot of...
So I didn't mean that sound like a dig at you. I don't know.
It's more that there's not been a lot of sort of legendary swordsman lesbians in Hollywood
Shields
before.
Shields women. I don't know what the equivalent is.
There just hasn't been someone like that that's so open about it in my lifetime.
She gets a pass then, okay. I would hate to be stuck on an island with a wrinkly old nudist. And it kind of ties back into Frank Skinner, though, doesn't it?
Oh, my God. I did a gig for nudists last year before lockdown, and anytime I tell people about this, they're always like, did they not have clothes on? Well, yeah, they didn't have clothes on. Otherwise, it would just be a gig. With people who happen to be nudists in their spare time. So it was at a pub in Camden that has a normal gig most of the time. And I arrived at the pub downstairs. Everything looked normal, except there was a security guard at the bottom of the stairs. And I said, I'm here for the nudist gig. And I guess a lot of people didn't say that because he just was like, yeah, come up. And then I went up and the whole room was just naked people of all shapes and sizes. And I was normally I'll sit at the back of the room on the floor doing notes before I go on stage, which is fine, apart from when you're sitting, when no one has trousers on, you can just see all these like bare, hairy arse cracks. In front of you. And the editor of Nudists Monthly or Nudists Britain, he was there with his wife and kept cornering me, trying to tell me how great nudism was. And once everyone's naked, no one is naked. I was like, I couldn't give a shit. I just want to do my set. And they had gender-neutral toilets, which I'm totally for. Like, our toilets are homer gender-neutral. Except when I was in the toilets doing my makeup, like a sort of a vision or a ghost in the background, I looked in the mirror and there was a 20-stone naked man staring at me, crouched in the corner of the toilets. And we caught each other's eye and he kind of looked embarrassed as if to go, yeah, I know this isn't normal either. And a man in the front row got a stiffy. He was really fit and he was holding his willy down during my set.
Wow. Oh my God.
And you know what comedians really love? When we have a good gig, if we have a really good gig, people all rush towards you at the end of the gig to say they loved your set. I really love that. Not when everyone's naked and rushing at you like a load of bald wolves or something. Horrible. Horrible.
Oh my God, that's... I don't think we're going to get better than that.
But it was a good gig because the power dynamic was really firmly established because I had my clothes on. No one heckled me.
I guess it's so easy to find faults in your audience if they're heckling you and they're naked.
Yeah.
Do you know what, Fern? I think that's such a good place to end. I don't think we're going to get much better than that. I think we should probably wrap it up there. Thank you so much for coming on Desert Island Dicks today.
Thank you for having me.
Obviously, we've all had a wonderful time and we want to see more of you. So where and how can we do that? Not in a nudist way, you know, just in general, in a normal comedic, you know, way. How can we see more of you?
Oh, I'm on tour from the 25th of January all over Britain. And I'm doing a big show at Earth in Hackney, which is kind of too hipster a venue for me. And that's next June.
Nice one. Right. We will see you there. Thank you very much for coming on Desert Island Dicks.
Thank you for having me.
Play some music or something so it's not awkward when I walk off stage.
So there you go. That was Fern Brady on Desert Island Dicks Live back in December 2021. All the way back there last year. So long ago now. Lost in the mists of time, but saved for posterity in audio form. Just a reminder, now that you've heard it, that you can get tickets for our next Desert Island Dicks Live with Lou Sanders at 2 North Down by following the link in the description or just Googling Desert Island Dicks Live. I'm sure that will work as well. or just go to the link in our social pages at DixPod on Twitter and Instagram. Desert Island Dix is a Sync Clap production. It was dreamt up and thought of and produced by James Deacon, who also edited this episode. It's hosted by me, Dan Benedictus, and it's often edited by Chris Attaway. We get social media support by Jason Leach and Chinsey Clinton. And a big shout out, as always, to our statistician, Grandmaster Flash, and our historian, our podcast historian, John Deacon. Not the one from Queen. This one's much better. I think that's it for me. We'll be back next week with another wonderful podcast from another wonderful guest, and maybe I'll find a new adjective to describe things other than wonderful. Who knows? Let's see. The only way you can find out is by listening, and the best way to make sure you never miss an episode is, of course, to subscribe. So do that. If you want to leave us a rating and a review, that is also very much appreciated. Thanks again for listening. Bye.